grab that.
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Early Childhood and Family Supports to order for Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. Just a couple of things about how we're going to proceed. Obviously, there's more people probably here that would like to testify than there's going to be time. We have 2 hours max. We've got to be out of this room for the next committee meeting. There is an overflow room, E.
And C.
And C. For people who want to, and I'll remind people, you can always submit written testimony for the record, and we have quite a bit of written testimony on the record already, but that's another means to do that for people to take a look at. So given the number of people that are here, I just ask you to be keep your remarks as brief as you can and still make the point. You're entitled to make the point that you want to make, and I respect that. And from a process standpoint, I'll be alternating between those in favor and those that are questioning or imposed. I don't necessarily all oppose necessarily, but those that are signed up that way, and see how many people that we can get through. Okay? So Representative Williamson and Representative Diego, and who else is in? Alonzo Leon. Okay. The three of you could get, and of course you need to tell us who you are for the record. Thank you. I know you know that. But.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Williamson. For the record, I'm the state representative for House District 36, which is the west side of Portland. I join you today along with Representative Hernandez and Alonzo Leon as the co-chief sponsors of House Bill 3087, otherwise known as the Family Act. The United States is the only advanced economy in the world that does not provide paid maternity leave to working mothers, and one of only a handful that does not guarantee the right to paid leave for fathers or for those providing care for seriously ill family members. Despite our recent successes in protecting workers and growing the economy, this is one key area where our policies are not in line with a growing need. This bill would create a paid family and medical leave insurance program so that no one has to make the decision about whether to forego their livelihood or to take care of a sick child or family member. It does this through a half of 1% contribution from employees and employers, and the money would be collected by the Department of Revenue, and the program would be administered by the Oregon Department of Consumer and Business Services. Too many families in this state are living on the margins and just one planned hardship away from financial ruin or becoming homeless. And in front of us, we have an opportunity to provide working Oregonians with the kind of security they need to thrive and prosper. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you.
Chair Lively, Vice Chair Hack, for the record, my name is Diego Hernandez. I'm a state representative, House District 47, East Portland. So I'm going to walk you through some details around the bill. The Family Act will be available to individuals who have serious health conditions to take time away from work. Also, those who need parental leave for birth or adoption or foster care placement. And those who need care for a family member in serious health condition. Also, for service members or their next of kin, or those that need to take military family leave as well. Under this bill, an employee becomes eligible for the program after 90 days and contributing sufficiently to the fund, and then can qualify for 12 weeks of paid leave. For new parents, HB 3087 adds 6 weeks of parental leave, giving new parents up to 18 weeks of leave care for a new child. These benefits can be used once per year. The Family Act does not provide full wage replacement, but does provide enough to help workers who need it get by. Oregonians working less than the state average weekly wage, which is $922.04 a week in 2015, would earn 90% of their wages. Those who earn above that amount would receive 90% plus 50% of their remaining wages up to the set cap, which would be determined by DCBS. DCBS also has the ability to modify the wage replacement rate in an event that the fund is paying out more than it is receiving. Colleagues, the financial impact of the health crisis can have devastating effects on individuals and families. This is especially true for people who are working paycheck to paycheck. So I urge you to support House Bill 3087. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Alonso Leon, and I am the representative for House District 22, which consists of Whitburn through the north part of Salem. My parents were farm workers and worked very hard to support my family as I was growing up, but we were frequently struggling to get by. When my siblings were born, my mother had to return to work within a few days after giving birth. Later, as the oldest in my family, it was often my responsibility to care for my siblings when they got sick. This, of course, meant I missed days of school so that my parents wouldn't have to miss a day of work. For my family growing up, and for so many families in my district, a lost day of work meant choosing between putting food on the table or paying for rent. No Oregon family should ever have to make that decision. However, many Oregonians all across the state are living the same experience as I did. House Bill 3087 will provide economy-wide benefits by reducing spending on public assistance programs and increase labor force participation, which will generate a large tax base and increase consumer spending. This bill also benefits employers, especially small businesses, that would never be able to afford this kind of program, but can now compete with large corporations that currently offer paid family leave. Providing paid family leave for working Oregonians is the right thing to do, and I believe now is the right time to do it. I urge your support on the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you.
Thank you very much. Do any members of the committee have any questions for? Yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for being here. A couple of quick questions. How does this bill differ from the Federal Family Leave Act?
So the bill, Chair Lively, Representative Hack, the bill that's been introduced at the federal level or the current Family Medical Leave Act?
The current.
Well, it differs in that there's wage replacement. And so you have protected family leave at both the state and the federal level. And I know there are people in this room who know this better than me, but it doesn't replace your wage. So it protects your job, but it doesn't replace your wage.
Okay, one more.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. So you had mentioned that this helps small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So does the employer pay for the time off, or do they not pay for the time off? And if so, how does that help a small business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think we have experts in here who can break that down for you as
okay.
well.
The next group, I
Great.
Think, will go
Thank
through
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions for our three representatives? Thank you,
Thank you.
For
Thank you.
Coming. Now I'm going to call up a group that can probably help answer or explain some of those, so we'll hear a little bit more about the bill before we get further in the testimony. So Andrea Peluso, Steve Demarest, and Elaine Friesen-Strang. Thank you.
If there's people stuck in the public system.
Please, go ahead, sorry.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Andrea Peluso. I am the executive director of Family Forward Oregon and a representative of the Time for Oregon Coalition, which is a diverse group of community organizations, labor unions, small businesses, racial justice organizations, public health entities, and advocates for women, seniors, and children who have been working together to create a paid family and medical leave insurance program for Oregon. So first, I'd like to start by saying that caregiving matters. It's the work upon which the rest of our economy is built, even though it is often done invisibly and with little or no compensation or recognition. Caregiving is important to raising the next generation, to helping our elders age with dignity, to reducing healthcare costs, to improving childhood outcomes, and the list goes on and on. Having our loved ones able to be there for us is critical when we need it. Being with our loved ones when they need care is something we all value. We all know this, and it's time to create the legal and financial supports that make this possible for all our families. Whether it's the birth of a child, the serious illness of a spouse, or the end of life for a parent, we all need time to care for our families or to be cared for by a loved one. And providing care to a loved one shouldn't mean compromising our economic security. Right now, only 14% of American workers have access to paid family and medical leave through their job. And only 40% of American workers have access to a short-term disability policy at work. As was asked, the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, and the Oregon Family Leave Act, OFLA, took important first steps by creating standards for providing unpaid but job-protected time to deal with these critical life events. But these protections have not actually been extended to everyone. Based on tenure, the number of hours you work, or the size of your employer, you may not even have access to job-protected but unpaid time away from work. So that means that only about 60% of American workers are covered by the Federal Family Medical Leave Act, and the same is true for Oregon workers under the Oregon Family Leave Act. Additionally, many people who qualify for unpaid leave report that it's basically inaccessible to them because they can't go without income in order to make use of the time. So that means that in our country now, a quarter or one-fourth of new mothers are going back to work within 2 weeks of having a baby. They've barely recovered from childbirth, much less had sufficient time to bond with their new baby and adjust to parenthood. A lot of people are taking breaks from work, so they're not going without breaks from work, so they can bank all of their sick and vacation time, if they have sick and vacation time, and then exhausting it all with the birth of a new child, so when they return to work, they have nothing left. Many families are going into debt or spending down their savings or retirement savings to cover unpaid time away from work during these critical events. Some also are applying for government assistance or facing bankruptcy as a result of a family emergency. People, especially women, quit their jobs knowing the long-term financial consequences will be devastating for them because they refuse to abandon a family member that needs them. People are going back to work when they've not recovered yet from a serious illness or injury, leading to greater health problems down the road, and the list goes on and on. We know families are finding heroic ways to cover the gaps that are created by our lack of paid family and medical leave, but it's at their great expense to both their health and their financial security. And it just doesn't have to be this way. Nearly every other country in the world has figured out how to make sure new mothers have time off. In the U.S., mothers aren't even guaranteed a single day to have a baby, much less to recover from having a baby and bond with that child. Most other wealthy nations have figured out how to ensure all new parents, including fathers, have time to care for a new child, and that everyone has paid time to recover from serious illness or to care for family members with a serious illness. The good news is because nearly every other country in the world has tested various models for doing this, and because a similar insurance program already exists in four other states, we know a lot about what works. We've seen the data to show that these programs create a win-win for employers and employees, and data supports the positive and economy-wide benefits that programs like this create. So, a statewide paid family and medical leave insurance program will operate much like other social insurance programs that we all know about, including unemployment insurance, Social Security, or workers' compensation. Employers and employees each make contributions to a pooled state fund. The contributions currently will be capped at half of 1% of payroll. The fund, which is designed to be self-sustaining and to cover its own startup and ongoing administrative costs, will be administered by the Department of Consumer and Business Services, with support from the Department of Revenue, the Employment Department, and the Bureau of Labor and Industries. It's important to note that we do have technical amendments that will be coming to this committee, and we look forward to a more in-depth conversation about the program details once those amendments are before us. Every employer and employee in Oregon would be covered by this program, regardless of the number of hours they work, the size of their employer, or the type of work they do. This will include elective coverage for those who are self-employed. For us, the universality of this program is a critical equity principle, one that acknowledges that most of us will have a child, experience an illness, or lose a loved one. These life experiences are universal. Ensuring that we all have access to this program reduces stigma for needing and using the time. It also reduces the experience of on-the-job discrimination that is faced by caregivers. And it protects those of us with the least economic security who are often working in sectors that have historically been excluded from even basic labor protections. Additionally, every type of family is covered by this bill. Oregon's families are beautiful in their diversity. They are two-parent, one-parent, blended, multi-generational. Some are related by blood. Others are chosen families. Whatever their configuration, every family needs recognition and protection, and this bill ensures that. When an employee has a qualifying reason for leave, including welcoming a new child into the family, time to recover from a serious illness or injury, time to care for a seriously ill family member, to care for a service member as their next of kin, or to take military family leave, they will apply for wage replacement directly from the state. So the employer does not manage that component. Someone who needs paid family or medical leave could qualify, as was said, for up to 12 weeks a year based on medical necessity. So they qualify for a specific amount of time to manage their own health condition or the care of a seriously ill family member. When a parent welcomes a new child, they could add an additional 6 weeks of leave for up to 18 weeks. In this bill, the employee wage replacement would be tied to Oregon's average weekly wage, which is a figure calculated each year by the Employment Department. In my testimony, there is a graph that demonstrates what this wage replacement will look like. But essentially, an employee making less than Oregon's average weekly wage would receive 90% wage replacement. Those making over the average weekly wage would receive 90% up to the average weekly wage, plus 50% of their remaining wages up to a cap. There are a couple of common misconceptions that you might hear about how these programs work in other states that I'd like to clarify. First, it should be noted that paid family and paid family leave and temporary disability insurance or medical leave are co-managed but function slightly differently in the four other states that already have this program. This bill creates one program merging paid family and medical leave together, a solution that we think works best for Oregon. But to really understand how this works in other states, you have to look at the laws and rules around each of these programs, paid family and medical leave. In most other states, their programs provide more leave than this bill contemplates for personal medical issues. For example, in New Jersey, an employee can qualify for up to 26 weeks of leave because of their own medical condition. In California, that's 52 weeks. A new mother may qualify for disability leave for recovery from childbirth and also family bonding time. Also, in these other states, all private sector employers, regardless of size, are included in paid family and medical leave insurance programs in every state. In half of these states, as is true in most other nations, paid family and medical leave is funded through joint contributions by both employers and employees. The idea that the bill that before you is more generous or different in its funding mechanism or more comprehensive than those other states is false. We have a lot of expertise on how these programs are run and how they're working, and while we've learned from the programs in other states, we believe this bill, House Bill 3087, represents the right solution for Oregon, one that simplifies the administration, uses existing Oregon processes wherever possible, that draws on the expertise of agencies administering similar programs, that is self-sustaining and fiscally sound, and that provides a benefit employers and employees need and can afford. This is a program whose time has come. We believe it's long overdue. We need to figure out how to support caregivers and those needing care. We need to support families' economic security in the short and long term. And we need to acknowledge that every one of us at some point will need time away from work for the very events that make us human, that demonstrate the family values we all hold. We need our state to have a plan for how to better support all our working families, and we urge your support. I'm also happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I was hoping she answered your question, but if you haven't, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So much. And I can relate. I was one of those mothers that went back to work 3 weeks after and took my baby with me because I didn't have, one, couldn't afford to have anybody watch him, two, didn't have anybody to watch him. So I'm absolutely sympathetic, and I get it. I'm just trying to wrap my head around how we do this in a way that works for everybody.
That's right.
One other question, you did answer most of mine. One other that I did have was, what is the total leave time a person could qualify for by combining those?
So if someone's taking leave for their own health condition or to care for a seriously ill family member, the maximum amount they could qualify for in a year is 12 weeks. And they would have to qualify based on medical necessity. So there would be a process that the employer does not need to be involved with, that is managed by the state agency that is administering this fund, which I think is a real benefit of the way this program is structured, where the employee would provide medical verification for the amount of time they need for whatever condition they're facing, and they would qualify for that length of time. So they couldn't have more than 12 weeks, but what we've seen from utilization data in every other state is that the vast majority of folks are taking leaves that are a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks long. They're not mostly maxing out the amount of time that's available to them. For parental leave, they would qualify for the initial 12-week plus a 6 weeks that's only for parental. It's designed that way because we know that the more time, the better, frankly, with new babies. And we know that that's really important to get to a reasonable amount of bonding time. But we also know that for some folks, they might have two qualifying instances in the same year. So if you've already taken a couple of weeks off because you were in a car accident or you were helping your elderly parent who has a serious illness, you may have taken 2 weeks there and you would qualify for the remainder of the 18 weeks if you also had a new baby in that same year, but not an additional 18 weeks, if that makes sense.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, next.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, my name is Steve Demarest. For the record, I am the president of SAU Local 503. I'm appearing here today in support of House Bill 3097, the Family Medical Leave Insurance, or Family Act. On behalf of the more than 65,000 workers represented by SAU Locals 503 and 49, here in the state of Oregon, I'm very pleased to offer this testimony in support of a bill that will offer Oregon families much-needed help. Currently, just over 1 in 10 American workers have access to some form of paid family leave. When a worker does not have access to leave, they are left without an important safety net to deal with critical life events like the birth of a child or illness in the family. This forces an impossible choice for many workers, the choice between keeping a roof over their head or providing care for their families. Nobody should lose all the income their family relies upon or risk losing their job when they are welcoming a new baby into their lives, taking care of a seriously ill family member, or are seriously ill or injured themselves and need time to recover. We need policies that recognize these critical life events happen to all of us, and a policy that supports families financially when they need to provide or receive family care. While currently federal and state laws protect many workers for family leave, they do not cover everyone, even provide job protection for everyone, and they also do not provide a path to replace income. We believe that House Bill 3087 would help remedy this. Here are some stories from everyday Oregonians who struggle keeping up with life events due to a lack of paid family and medical leave. Julie Markowitz, a coding auditor at Kaiser and a member of SEIU Local 49, was injured in a motorcycle accident. She needed her family by her side while she was in and out of a coma. Although her husband and son both qualified for unpaid medical leave under OFLA, they were unable to afford to take more than a few days off work, leaving her alone for long periods of time during a traumatic period. Ashley Garber, a CNA at a skilled nursing facility, gave birth to her daughter, Charlotte, in June of 2016. Ashley and her partner, also a CNA, had to save for months, not just for the things that their new baby would need, but to be able to fund Ashley's maternity leave. Normally, maternity leave is 12 weeks, but is often unpaid. Ashley went back to work part-time after only 8 weeks and had to start providing child care in her home just to be able to afford the time she took off to be with her newborn. With paid family leave, Ashley would have been able to stay home with her infant for the time they both needed and for Ashley to fully recover from her C-section. Brandy Morgan from Portland, a worker at the Department of Human Services, suffers from several autoimmune disorders. This often means that her illnesses are more lengthy and intense than you and I would face. Additionally, she faced a difficult pregnancy in spring of 2016 that required several missed days of work in order to monitor both her health and her baby's. With her current private pay short-term disability policy, she was only able to take 8 weeks off, still at an immense financial hardship. As a result, the family of this state employee has to ration food at the end of the month to make it to the next paycheck. It doesn't have to be this way, and it shouldn't be this way for the working families across our state. At SEIU, we also have a concern that Oregon is not adequately addressing the fact that as a result of demographic shifts, more seniors will require more family caregiving in the near term. This bill is an important recognition of the increasing demands being placed on families as they work to care for elders. I urge you, please, join us in supporting House Bill 3087. It's time to recognize that our workplace and public policies have not kept pace with a growing number of families who have all of the working age adults in the workplace. Thank you, and I'm also glad to answer questions.
Thank you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Elaine Friesen-Strang, and I am the volunteer state president for AARP Oregon. And on behalf of our 500,000 members, AARP Oregon is proud to offer our support for House Bill 3087. There are nearly 470,000 unpaid family caregivers in Oregon who are taking care of an adult relative, spouse, or friend. The value of this is $4.5 billion a year. Most of them are doing so without basic workplace protections. Nearly everyone needs paid family or medical leave at some point in their lives. Many end up facing economic hardship due to lost jobs, loss of health care coverage, or reduced Social Security benefits. And I'm one of those statistics. At the age of 58, I left my job as a director of a nonprofit program because I could no longer work full-time and care for my 93-year-old father. For years, my sister and I struggled to help our parents with their medical, residential, transportation, and emotional needs, and we were both working full-time. Dr. Karen Hooker from OSU points out that the average middle-aged couple has more parents than they do children, and many of them are going to need assistance. When you realize your parents can no longer advocate for themselves, when they are dependent on others for their daily needs, something has to give. And for me, it was my career. I was fortunate. My husband was still working. But the reality for many workers struggling to make ends meet from paycheck to paycheck, they simply can't afford unpaid leave. Lost wages and benefits average $304,000 a year over the lifetime of people age 50 and older who stopped working to care for a parent. And as you know, the older you are, the harder it is to reenter the job market. Without paid leave and flexible workplace policies to support family caregivers, vulnerable seniors will increasingly be forced into taxpayer-supported long-term care settings, which would add even more pressure onto Oregon's already strained budget. This is a fair, common-sense solution. Everyone contributes. Everyone benefits. It allows Oregonians to work and care for themselves and their families. It gives workers the economic peace of mind they need to provide the care that their loved ones need to age with dignity at home, rather than move into more costly and often taxpayer-funded institutional settings. So AARP urges that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Representative Hayden.
I had a question on the testimony. I thought I heard, and I just want to clarify, I heard that there were four states that have this type of plan currently, and it was testified that those states are an employee-employer split. How much do the employers fund that insurance program?
I will tell you. It depends on the state. So in New Jersey, it's split in half those places. In New Jersey, the employee contributes 0.2% up to a cap, and the employer contribution varies from 0.1% to 0.75% of employee wages. And in New York, the employee contributes 0.5% of payroll up to a cap. And the employer contributes the balance of the cost that's not covered by the employee. So that's another variable rate. And the other states that have this are also Rhode Island and California, and the District of Columbia has just instituted but not implemented yet a policy.
And they also tax the employer or the employer pays?
In the District of Columbia, it's entirely employer-funded. The employee does not make a contribution. And in California and Rhode Island, it is entirely employee-funded.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You drew a comparison with unemployment insurance. Do you know what the current rate Oregon employers are paying for unemployment insurance? I've been out of it too long, but I know it's a variable scale that can be adjusted based on how much the trust fund needs.
That's right. I don't have that figure, and I'm happy to provide it for you. I'll look into that. But this is designed in a similar way with unemployment insurance in mind. In the aim of fiscal solvency, we really want to make sure that the agency has some latitude with a cap to be able to adjust rates up or down. What we've seen in a lot of other states is actually utilization is less than what was anticipated, and rates can be adjusted down because there's more in savings than is needed to fill the benefit obligation. So we want to give the agency that kind of latitude and also to adjust some of the other conditions to make sure that the fund is solvent long term.
Follow up.
Sure.
So, and I don't want to get in the weeds too much here, but I'm just kind of curious the math that went into it. I think unemployment insurance is quite a bit higher than 0.5%, and so I'm just kind of curious how we think 0.5% is going to make it work from the employer investment side. And then also you said 0.5% cap, but then you talked about agency flexibility to be able to raise and lower that.
Yep.
So that suggests maybe it's not a cap?
There'll be a max cap, but I think there'll be a window in which the agency can adjust down, and then they may adjust back up, but not beyond whatever the cap is that is set by the legislature. We are working with the agency. They are putting together a sort of cost-benefit analysis that will provide, I think, the answer to the question you're asking, which is what is expected utilization for these different reasons based on other states. We kind of know for which conditions people will qualify for what number of weeks. So they've started to put together numbers that will answer how much do we expect people will use of the weeks that they're provided at these wage levels with employment department data, knowing how many people make which amounts, how much do we expect this will cost, and what would be the needed contribution to fund that. And it's come in right around or just below 0.5% of payroll for both employers and employees.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions for the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure. So this time I'm going to call up Tom Fessler, Lisa Stone, and Anna Sharp.
I am well.
Maybe I am, maybe I'm not.
Mean Girls when King Kong.
Are they in the room?
Keep moving.
They're on my list.
You're a day off.
So there's a
monster.
Oh. So, Scott Winkles, is Scott in the room?
I don't see Scott back there.
I don't either. Oh.
Wait, maybe.
Here they must be coming. Sorry. I'm not used to having more rooms than the one that's here. So. If you'd please just introduce yourself for the record before you speak.
Good afternoon. Members of the committee, thank you. I'm Tom Fessler. I live in the Mount Angel area. Excuse me, I'm the fourth generation farmer, and I have some fifth generation working with me, and sixth generation is interested. He was out in the greenhouses with me last night. Loves it, but it's a little early. And my biggest concern is we're fighting paid sick leave right now. It caused us to add more human resources people on our payroll to cover all the different functions that we have to do with that. We're fighting the increase in minimum wage. Our commodity prices are down, especially on the farm side. Blueberries is a great example. 2 years ago, we were paid 76 cents a pound for them. This past year, 40 cents a pound. It's about 60 cents to recover your costs. So it's tough to make it in farming. 90% of our product is exported out of the state of Oregon. And so we're battling with states that don't, customers that don't want to pay the increases that we ask for because they don't feel that we deserve it. On our company, I calculated that we'd be looking at $50,000 to $60,000 with a half a percent increase in our payroll. The additional burden that we have in HR for filling out forms and everything. And I guess my biggest question is 1% of payroll going to fund 12 weeks of leave and be sustainable? I'm really concerned about that. So that's my testimony, and thank you. I appreciate it, and I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you for taking the time to testify. So next, please.
Hello, Chair Lively. My name is Lisa Stone, and I am a second-generation involved in a second-generation family farm, and we do Christmas trees in Marion County. I'm also part of a sixth-generation fruit farm in Marion County as well. I'm proud of our family business and the traditions and the lifestyle that we've been able to carry and hope to pass that on to our children. I also care about our employees on the flip side. We do all we can for our employees to take care of them. We, at this point, have been struggling with the increase in minimum wage, as they've stated, as well as the sick leave. We have increased thousands of dollars a year that we've incurred because of the increases in minimum wage that are coming and are here, as well as the sick leave that we're required to offer our employees. With these, we are having a hard time absorbing it. Like they had stated, our crops are variable in prices. They fluctuate. We don't know what it's going to be next week, let alone 4 years from now. In this, with that, we're having to hire more HR. As of right now, I'm the HR department for both of our farms, which I can't keep up. I can't keep up with the mandates on what's required and what's coming down the pipeline that will be required for us. Our increase with half a percent doesn't seem like much, but it's about $7,000 a year. But that's on top of, we're looking at $50,000 for sick leave if people take it as it is already this year, on top of minimum wage going up every 6 months. For us as a farm, if this continues, this is just another nail in our coffin, and the ag community will be null and void in the state of Oregon. We are asking that you take into account small businesses and ag as well, in that we can't afford to continue to give and give and give. We would love to give all day long, but the reality is there's no money to give. We're scraping by as it is. We've heard that in the other states that, yes, there's leave acts, which is great. However, it's the employee-based ones seem to be kind of a better route, at least at this time for the state of Oregon, as far as small businesses are concerned. We just hope that you'll consider both sides of it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for testifying.
Chair Lively and committee members, my name is Anna Scharf, and I am a farmer and a family business owner in Polk County, Oregon, just outside of Salem. My family owns and operates about 2,500 acres, growing 10 different crops and providing seed cleaning and warehousing services for 5 other family-owned farms, as well as 10 Oregon companies. We have approximately 10 year-round employees, including family, and up to 30 or so during our peak harvest time, which includes a fifth-generation family farmer when he's willing. I'm here today to ask you to oppose House Bill 3087. First, I want to say that I care deeply about my employees. We have one employee who will be with us 40 years coming this June. He's actually been there almost as long as my husband. We also have many other family employees that are part of the exact same family. There are times of the year we laugh when we say that their name should be at the end of the driveway along with ours. However, they nor my family business can afford this new workforce tax. This bill creates a tax on employers and workers used to pay for a state government managed family leave insurance program. This bill is simply another mandated benefit The tools we used to have to reward our employees and encourage long-term relationships, such as vacation time, sick time, longevity pay, insurance, etc., have all needed to be altered in order to afford changes required to meet everyone. Vacation and sick time for long-term employees was eliminated and replaced with mandatory sick time for everybody. Insurance for year-round and long-term employees was eliminated due to the federal all-or-nothing mandate. And longevity pay was compressed to account for the jump and the upcoming jumps in minimum wage. House Bill 3087 would require my business to provide 3 months of paid leave, and this could happen at any time during the year, including critical harvest times. Oregon's recent mandatory paid sick time leave has already caused an increase in our labor costs and reporting paperwork. This, while well-intentioned, would add just another layer and cost burden for my family business. We don't have an HR department, like these folks said. We don't have a payroll department. Our HR payroll person is also the inventory manager, shipping and receiving clerk, safety coordinator, contract negotiator, accounts payable, receivable department, and yes, our family lobbyist. Again, I want to say I value and care deeply about my employees, but profit margins in agriculture are slim and continue to become slimmer. The continued buildup of state requirement regulations, wage increases, mandatory paid sick time, etc., are eventually going to break the backs of agriculture and family farms in this state. I'm just doing my best to hang on for the next generation of farmers so they can hang on for the next generation of farm workers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for any members? Representative Hayden?
Thank you, Chair Lively. Does this bill provide anything to farmers from the standpoint of commodities are also often a fixed price set out of your control? And so you have commodities that you want to sell, but you're not able to adjust the price when your cost of providing that goes forward. So is the state of Oregon providing farmers any relief on regulation or other costs that you have to help you be sustainable?
Not any to my knowledge.
Representative Lively, or Chair Lively and Representative Hayden, there are other states in the United States that provide crop subsidies for commodities that we currently grow that we do not have. Minnesota would come to mind, and their state is offering subsidies for grass seed farmers, and we're trying to compete. Thank you.
Representative Hack, and then.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for what you do. Agriculture is such a backbone to our state, and again, I said it earlier, I'm so sympathetic to this issue, but I also know that we can't hurt those that provide the much-needed jobs that we have in our state. And it's disheartening to think that we can't come to something, some sort of an impasse, and make this work. But I guess my question would be, is there anything in this bill that provides any type of a tax credit or anything to you all to not, once again, we've hit you with sick leave, we've hit you with the increase in minimum wage, we just keep coming at you and keep saying, do more, do more, do more. Is there anything in this bill that incentivizes you all or gives anything on that side?
Go ahead.
Chair Lively, Representative Hack, I'd like to see it. If it is, I can't find it.
Thank you.
And my tax credits seem to be disappearing in other committees as well.
Thank you.
Representative Malmstrom.
Yes, I have a question regarding, you know, family farms or other farming communities. When I understand it would be a great hardship for somebody to take a, you know, a maternity leave, for example, in the middle of crop season. I'm not a farming person, but I can imagine that would be the worst possible time. But people still have babies. What happens? Do they just take very short leaves, or do they make other arrangements? What happens when they do have to leave in the middle of the crisis of crops and what have you?
Chair Lively and Representative Malmstrom, I have a 11-year-old daughter that I had in the middle of August. Farming is not the exact time that you have a baby in the middle of August. And I was actually working for a large corporation at the time, and I took exactly 3 weeks off for that. I had some paid maternity leave, but I relied on my built-up vacation time and sick time that I had saved for years in order to be able to take that time off that I needed. If we had an employee or several of those employees, which all share the same last name because we employ a lot of folks from the same family, taking time off together which they could underneath this, in the middle of August or July, I could potentially shut down five other family farming operations and lose business that comes to me because I provide a service for them. It's not just my family I'm supporting.
Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you for taking the time to testify. So next I'll call, is it Soraya Johnson, Elizabeth Elwood, and is it Diana Sullivan? Okay. By the way, it's not your handwriting, whoever it is. It's so much better than mine, I can't hardly read mine. So it's a little unusual for me to see good handwriting, but thank you. So whoever wants to go first.
All right. Chair Lively and members of the House Committee on Early Childhood and Family Supports, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Sarai Johnson. I'm a working mother. I'm self-employed, and I live in Eugene. I'm here today because paid family leave is critical to the health and economic security of families like mine. When I was pregnant with my second child, I worked in a professional upper management position with a regional nonprofit. I left work for maternity leave about 3 weeks before my due date, as I had signs of early labor and I was concerned about the health of my baby. However, due to hostility from my boss and implications that my job performance was being judged by my based on my need to attend to my health and that of my baby, my caregiving responsibilities at home, I ended up working from home almost full time in that period, which was incredibly stressful and not the rest that I needed. Because I was so concerned about losing my job, I went back to work part-time when my newborn baby was just 1 week old and full-time when he was 2 weeks old. Excuse me. I'm sorry. This happened 4 years ago, and it's still hard for me to talk about. Daycares don't take one-week-old babies, reasonably. At first, I managed by taking my baby to the office with me. But then when he was 8 weeks old, my employer made a sudden policy change and did not allow babies in the office anymore. I had to find a nanny, thank you, an expense that I had not planned for, and the nanny took my baby nearly full time for about 4 weeks until I could get him into daycare at the minimum age of 12 weeks. Too many women are forced to go back to work within 2 weeks of having a baby, as I was. In fact, 25% of mothers in this country are back at work within 2 weeks. We're back at work at a time when our babies need our full-time emotional and physical attention, and most women are not even physically recovered from birth after 2 weeks. Child care centers don't take infants that young, and the resulting stress is terrible for newborns and terrible for parents. It's also caustic for the workplace. Too many people are treated with hostility, judgment, and threats at work when they have children. Paid family leave would make a huge difference. First, it would mean that people could afford to actually take leave without the fear of going into long-term debt. And second, paid family leave will help build a culture in the workplace that is more supportive of people's family caregiving responsibilities. I shared this painful experience with the hope of making things better for others in the future. Please pass HB 3087. Oregonians need paid family and medical leave.
Thank you very much.
Please. Representative Lively and committee members, my name's Elwood. I'm a social worker and I'm a new mom and I live in Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with you. Last summer, when my wife Catherine was 36 weeks pregnant, I was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, a blood cancer, and I was told I wouldn't be able to work for a minimum of 6 months while I focused on healing. Chemotherapy destroyed my immune system, and as a social worker working in a nursing home where we often have a lot of sick folks, my workplace became unsafe for me. In anticipation of our baby being born, I had saved my PTO and was hoping to spend a month with him and support Catherine after the birth. I had about 3 weeks saved when I left because of my illness. Catherine is an adjunct professor and a self-employed therapist, which means she has no PTO to start with. We'd saved money in anticipation for her working less after the birth, but the loss of my income put extreme pressure on her to return to work sooner than we hoped. She returned to work when our baby was 6 weeks old and for more hours than we had planned. I couldn't work due to my health problems, and for a few months, neither of us had any income. Our health insurance premium cost us $1,100 a month alone. We also had a new baby and all of the other usual expenses people have. We used up all the money we'd saved for the birth and other emergency savings, and all of this has led to increased financial anxiety for the entire family and made it hard to devote all of our energy and time to parenting our baby. I thought I was doing everything right to protect our family. I was healthy, I had savings, I was working, I had insurance, I had gotten my master's, but none of that matters when you get sick. In 1 7-month period, I spent everything I had, and now my family feels worried and insecure for the future. If my wife and I had had paid medical and family leave, we wouldn't have been so financially stressed during this time. We could have focused more on my health. We could have focused more on the important first year of our son's life, building a strong attachment to help him be a loving and secure adult. Representative Lively and committee, I'm asking you to please support House Bill 3087. Paid family and medical leave is critical to the stability of families when babies are born. It's also critical when people get sick, like I did, and can't work for a period of time. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you for testifying. Please.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Diane Solomon. I'm a nurse researcher, nurse midwife, and psychiatric nurse practitioner representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I'm privileged to testify today as I'm a passionate advocate for the effects of paid family leave. As you know, America is the only first world country without paid maternity leave. Women in France enjoy 16 weeks paid, in Canada, 15 weeks. In Germany, both parents receive a year of paid leave, and in Japan, 15 weeks paid at 66%. It is beyond time for Oregon and the U.S. to join the rest of the civilized world. I can attest that our current family leave system, forcing new mothers, for instance, to choose between a paycheck or leaving their infant, predisposes women to postpartum depression. I see the downstream effects in my practice, devoted largely to pregnant and postpartum mothers. Children of depressed mothers are prone to catastrophic outcomes. These children suffer higher rates of psychiatric illness, impaired cognitive, social, and academic functioning, and lifelong sequelae, including often entry into our criminal justice system. Research robustly bears out the single best health investment we could possibly make in our communities with greatest long-term payoffs of any health issue, physical or mental, would be to treat maternal depression. Children of successfully treated mothers are put on a much more positive life trajectory than those who are not. Studies show when mothers and fathers as well spend time with children, everyone benefits. And when mothers are well supported, families thrive. On the opposite end of this lifetime spectrum, at any given time, over 42 million Americans care for an adult family member. I've listened firsthand to adult children, distressed, anxious, and guilty that they can't spend time caring for ailing parents as they cannot afford to leave work. These caregivers can suffer PTSD, depression, anxiety, and complicated grief, intense downstream costs to an already overburdened healthcare system. House Bill 3087 is crucial to help families care for each other at the beginning and end of life, as well as for the disabled, injured, or ill. Investing now saves immeasurably later and will do much towards creating a more civil society. Thank you for your compassionate stewardship in impacting the lives of present and future Oregonians, and therefore all of us. I urge your support for House Bill 3087.
Thank you very much. Any questions for any member of this panel? Okay.
For your stories.
Thank you for taking the time to testify. So I'm next going to call up Scott Winkles, Lori Saffensall-Spiel, and Mark Landauer. outside. I saw them come in once. Here they come. I saw you before.
Thank you. Did you get your hot cocoa?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. And League of Oregon Cities does have some concerns with this piece of legislation. Providing this coverage for all employees will have a significant fiscal impact on cities and other public employers. Based on my reading of the bill, employers would pay one-half of a percent of payroll, up to a half percent of payroll. And while this may seem like an unsubstantial amount to some, a city with an annual payroll expense of $33 million, which is roughly what the city of Springfield pays, would experience a fiscal impact of $165,000. To put this in another perspective, the PERS rate collar increase that most cities are, the average rate increase, there's a lot of variance in that PERS rate, is about 3 1/3%. And so this is, you put these things together, and it's a very significant impact on your local government service providers. And again, with the rate hikes we expect in 2019 and 2021 on that PERS rate, this will put cities in a significant bind. This, along with uncertainty in the healthcare market, what cities can absorb this cost, but it's going to come out of the city service level. There's no other place to put it. You have a capped finance system for local governments next to uncontrollable costs, and in between those two things are our ability to provide public protection, the protection of the public with police and fire services, libraries, parks, other vital services for Oregonians. Additionally, the manner in which this plan is constructed is somewhat confusing to me. City County Insurance Services, we offer a short-term disability plan, and lots of cities and other public employers make this sort of coverage available. Premiums run between $5.18 per month to $22.55 a month, depending on the coverage that someone opts for and their risk rating. If you buy this coverage, you know what your premium is and you know what's covered. The way I read this bill, that the coverage could fluctuate based on the funded status of the system. And one of the words that I haven't heard is from the testimony, and if I missed it, I apologize, is actuary. And is this actuarially sound, what's been constructed? When we purchase an insurance product or we make that insurance product available to an employee, we know what they're getting. Everybody knows what their plan is. I don't know that could be said for what's construed in this bill. And with that, I will conclude my testimony and turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Bovet.
Thank you. I know the stand's not quite as wide enough, is it?
Almost. Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. I won't repeat anything that my colleague, Mr. Winkle, said other than to say that counties share the same concern. Just a couple things to add, just to put in your thought pattern with relation to public entities. So there's 36 Oregon counties. It ranges from Multnomah County, which offers benefits and a benefit plan that arguably meets or exceeds what's in front of you today, down to some small counties in southern Oregon that are in, severe economic distress, would be in bankruptcy probably if we allowed them to go into bankruptcy. And so the strain on the fiscal services is pretty extreme, on top of the overlay of the PERS unfunded liability, which we're all having to pay for, which is another state mandate. But then on the positive side, I would also suggest to you that you take into consideration the fact that most public employers, through the collective bargaining agreements or even personnel rules, provide benefits for public employees that generally exceed what's in the private sector. So I think it's really important that you take into account what you hear from the public sector here and its impacts, which I think are a little bit different than what you're going to hear from the private sector, but the same types of concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Lori Satin spoke with the Oregon School Boards Association here in opposition to House Bill 3087, another unfunded mandate. OSBA appreciates the needs of working families, and as mentioned, we believe that this is reflected in our local CBAs, our collective bargaining agreements. We believe we have quality benefits already. This bill, while generous and confusing, imposes a substantial financial burden on school districts, creates considerable staffing challenges, and threaten the ability to provide quality education to the 550,000-plus students in Oregon's education system. Managing this bill looks to be quite a challenge. It looks like we're replicating OFLA with a payment structure. The bill makes it a number of changes that have dramatic impacts and will require tracking of multiple systems. Fiscal impact, taking the 0.5% just roughly on our payroll, 197 school districts. First year, $160 million. Second year, $170 million. That's strictly just the payroll costs. Size of employer in the bill. The bill covers anyone that has one employee. Current OFLA law, as you've probably heard, 25 employees in order for eligibility. We have school districts with less than 25 who don't have the OFLA system set up, which means that's an additional cost that hasn't been actually calculated in my fiscal. Definition of family, another big change, expands the definition for any individual whose close association to the employee is the equivalent of family relationship. There's really no way for an employer to monitor this aspect of the bill. Mr. Chair, this bill gives employers, I say, a one-two punch, provides leave option after 90 days of employment, and at the same time reduces the current eligibility period of standard OFLA leave from 180 days to 90. The bill will increase the number of employees who are eligible for leave that haven't worked with us for any significant period of time. And again, I don't believe these leaves are going to be able to run concurrently. Mr. Chair, the number one indicator for student achievement is a highly qualified teacher in front of students. A teacher works approximately 190 to 192 days. Classified works approximately 260 days as a full year. So as you can see, there's a challenge there if we don't run anything concurrently and we're stacking benefits. Coordination of these benefits. There's no provision that exempts an employee from collecting their family leave insurance payments, even though they're already receiving compensation from us through their collective bargaining agreement and policies we have in place. Administering the intermittent leaves, again, causes challenges for staffing and becomes cumbersome. And lastly, the lack of clarity about the new program is concerning to us and how to monitor and integrate overlapping systems. In a time where K-12 is looking at significant budget cuts with the number of $802 billion, districts are beginning their budgeting process now. This bill will continue to devastate our mission to educate students. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents approximately 950 special districts across the state of Oregon, providing 34 or 35 different types of districts, from water, fires, library, vector control, drainage, so on and so forth. I'll attempt to be brief here. Much has already been said. We are opposed to the bill because it is an unfunded mandate. With the increasing costs of health care, PERS, minimum wage, the cumulative impacts that are hitting public employers really is putting our membership in a very difficult bind in delivering critical services to the citizens that we serve. One of the aspects that hasn't been mentioned at this point, I do not see that this measure requires an employee who is going to take a family leave to use accrued sick or vacation time prior to getting the benefit from this measure. That creates a double cost for us, if you will. We would not only as an employer need to pay for the insurance premium as required under the bill, but we would also be obligated, if an employee chose to use just the insurance premium, to still at one point down the road, provide for that accumulated sick or leave time when the employee chose to do so if it was outside the family leave period. So at a very minimum, I would simply ask that if you're going to move this measure forward, that you require the employee to use the accrued vacation and sick leave at a bare minimum. We remain opposed to the bill even with that, but at least that would reduce the financial impact to the employers, and I thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you. I have one question on the last point.
Yeah.
So if someone were to use their paid sick leave first, you would be on the hook for paying for that 5 days, as opposed to, correct? If someone were to use their paid sick leave,
yes,
they would be paid their salary, their regular salary. You would be paying out fully for that amount of time, as opposed to this, where you're not on the hook. You're only on the hook for paying the premium, but nothing would come out of your budget during that period for that particular employee.
Well, as I understand the bill, Chair Lively, Representative Kenny Geyer, again, my point here is that the employer is paying an insurance premium mm-hmm. without any requirement for the employee to use the accrued sick or leave time. If the employee were to simply take the insurance benefit for the 12 weeks, mm-hmm. they still have that vacation time and sick leave available to them once that period ends. Okay. Yes, we would have to pay the full freight for the sick leave and for the vacation time. And yes, it would be full freight, if you will. But we believe that if an individual is going to receive that 12-week period of time, they ought to be paid out from their sick leave and their vacation leave prior to being eligible to get the insurance premium.
Okay. Any other questions of this panel? Looks like it. Thank you very much. So, members, we have 50 minutes. We have to be out of here by 3 o'clock, which means we have far more people signed up to testify. I think we have still... So we have 31 left? So we have 31 members left, and we have 50 minutes. So obviously, if you take... And everybody's done very well, and I appreciate the focus on the testimony. I'm just trying to make sure we get as many people that can. And so we're going to ask people to keep their testimony. Obviously, if we went 3 minutes, that's 90 minutes that we're already 30 minutes over. So if we can ask people to try to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, again, and if you've submitted testimony online, which most of you have, make sure you mention that your testimony is also online, so we make sure that we capture that. So if we can do that, we have a timer. We'll give you a pleasant warning. I don't think we have any big bells that go off at the end, but we'll see what happens. So where am I at? This one. So next is Alice Gates, Ramon Ramirez, and Audrey DeQuiz. Thank you very much, and just introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Chair Lively and committee members, my name is Alice Gates. I'm an associate professor of social work at the University of Portland, and I'm here to testify in strong support of HB 3087. For the last 6 months, I've been conducting research with my students on the need for paid family and medical leave in our state. We've interviewed 20 women in Multnomah, Washington, and Marion counties about their experiences of needing time off to care for a family member. We focused on populations whose experiences are not well represented in policy debates on this issue: low-wage workers, immigrants, and African-American women. Our findings echo existing research on this subject, which shows that the lack of access to paid leave leads women and families to experience emotional and financial stress during an already stressful time. One interviewee whose husband was employed in a nursery described her experience following a C-section. During her recovery, she was preoccupied by her family's finances when her husband took five days of unpaid leave to care for her and their other children. She worried about the lost wages on that one paycheck, stating, quote, "When the rent comes due and the bills, you wonder, what will I do? That leads you to grow more depressed and desperate. Others described having to borrow money to make up for lost income, and the debts were difficult to pay off and generated even more stress. One interviewee from Portland, a single mother, explained that after she gave birth, she needed more time off than her employer would allow. She quit her job at a local distribution center for a department store and reluctantly applied for TANF, where she received $427 a month in cash assistance, roughly one-fourth of her take-home pay when she was working. She supplemented this income with food stamps, housing assistance, energy assistance, and visits to food pantries. These examples demonstrate the lack of good options for many workers and parents, and it reveals the levels of economic and emotional distress experienced by low-wage workers when they miss even a few days of work. Our findings support the need for a paid family and medical leave program that responds specifically to the needs of low-wage workers, immigrants, and people of color, groups who experience increased vulnerability when they take unpaid time off. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Go ahead.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Aubrey Dakhiz. I'm a Portland resident and a volunteer with Forward Together. I'm here to support House Bill 3087, including the expanded definition of family as related by blood or affinity. This is the definition used by the federal government to regulate federal employees' paid leave. And I believe all families need paid family and medical leave to thrive, regardless of who they call family. The traditional family definition used in policies like Oregon Family Leave Act defines family member as parent, spouse, child, or grandparent, despite the fact that most of our families are structured differently today. The 2010 census found that nearly 80% of Americans do not fit the nuclear model. Rather, our families are blended, multi-generational, or chosen, and may include adult siblings or unmarried partners. This is particularly true of families of color, immigrant families, and LGBTQ families. I myself am the child of hardworking, loving Filipino immigrants who died from cancer within the past 2 years. My mother had been recruited into the U.S. Armed Forces and served our country for 20 years. Because the military quickly moved us away from our blood relatives, I grew up with chosen family, several aunties and uncles who came from the same province as my parents. We spent our holidays together, summers, and most weekends throughout my childhood and beyond. In February 2013, my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. I was 4 months into a new job, and I cobbled together whatever limited leave I could to take appointments with her and help care for her. A year later, my dad was diagnosed with an aggressive cancer and died just weeks later. Some of our chosen family were unable to take leave to be there. On top of dealing with my own pain and grief, my heart broke for these family members, knowing that they couldn't visit my family, my father on his deathbed, or my mother on hers just a few short weeks ago. When your loved ones are sick or dying, the last thing Oregonians should have to worry about is whether or not you are legally related. Please support House Bill 3087 and the expanded family definition so that all Oregon families can support their loved ones when they are in most need.
Thank you very much. And your testimony is on all this, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farmer Union. And I want to thank you, Chair Lively, and members of the committee for having me speak here. On behalf of our 6,500 members of Bakun, we strongly support House Bill 3087. Our mission is to improve the living and working conditions of farm workers. We support this because we believe that that this bill would truly benefit our workers and families. Farm workers are America's lowest paid workers. Most farm workers make less than the poverty guideline level, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. Yet we're America's most important workers because we put food on the table, day in and day out. Well, I appreciate the testimony from the farmers earlier. The fact of the matter is, if you go to the Department of Agriculture today, you'll see as you go into the department, there's a books that state where the state of the economy is for Oregon agriculture, and it says that Oregon agriculture is growing and it's prospering, right, over the last 5 years, right? We're number one in terms of production in caneberry. We're number one in Christmas tree harvest. We're number one in grass seed mint, right? And it's true that caneberries are at an all-time low, and that's because, you know, we planted too much, right? Farm workers are less likely to have access to family medical leave, yet. Farm workers suffer 25% more cancer rate than the general population. Women in this county, in Marion County, suffer 50% more miscarriages than the general average because our folks are working with dangerous pesticides day in and day out, right? The life expectancy of a farm worker is 49 years of age compared to the general population. So it's important for us to support this bill because we believe that it'll benefit our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good. Thanks a lot for testifying. Let's see. John Zielinski, Linda Lint, and Anthony Smith. Well, you can go ahead and start if somebody else shows up.
Chair Lively, Vice Chair Hack, Vice Chair Peluso, and committee members. My name is John Zielinski. I farm just northeast of Salem here, about 5 or 6 miles from here. There are many types of farming. Some utilize a lot of equipment to do the work. Others require lots of people to perform tasks that are too subtle for machines to accomplish. Our farm is primarily orchards of pears, apples, and peaches. Each year, all of our orchards require large amounts of skilled hands-on work. Each year, the trees are pruned in the winter, the fruit is thinned or spaced out on the tree in the spring, and there is, of course, harvest in the summer and fall, and the countless other physical jobs that are required to make our operation sustainable, both as a natural living organism and to be financially viable. House Bill 3087 has numerous parts that would be burdensome for agricultural operations. The Federal Family and Medical Leave Act is only required of the businesses that employ 50 or more people. Though I appreciate the concept of providing family leave for employees, I am puzzled as to why Oregon has a goal to develop a new method for funding family leave. The other four states that have chosen to provide a benefit greater than the federal standard, it is something that has been funded primarily by those who use it, the employees. The bill before you taxes employees and employers at 0.5%. For labor-intensive industries like agriculture, 0.5% is significant. There are other issues besides expense, additional HR paperwork, record-keeping and payments. Family farms and businesses do not need yet another mandate. Oregon farmers and ranchers are still working to comply with the minimum wage increases and paid sick leave law. On our farm, payroll is about $1 million a year. Our cost at 0.5% would be $5,000. I thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. NFIB represents about 7,000 small businesses here in Oregon, many being the smallest of small businesses. I will give you the shortened version of my testimony today, and then I'll go ahead and submit my full comments to OLIS later. But I'd like to begin by noting that in a very recent survey of our NFIB members here in Oregon, an overwhelming 95% of respondents opposed any paid family leave program that is funded by employers. Oregon small businesses are still struggling to incorporate recent policy choices made by the legislature into their now ever-changing business models, paid sick time, minimum wage. Those have been particularly consequential in the short and long-term sustainability of many Oregon small businesses. Because the issue of paid sick time came up on a previous panel, I do want to highlight Section 10 of the bill. Paid sick time is a benefit that employers are now required to pay to eligible employees, but this bill in Section 10 specifically prohibits an employer from requiring an employee to use paid sick time, paid vacation time, or any other paid time off before or as a condition of using the family family and medical insurance benefits. So yes, in fact, employers would essentially be responsible for funding both benefits. I'll move on to just note that 90% of our members have fewer than 25 employees, and that's a very important number because under current law, specifically OFLA, employers of 25 or more employees are required to provide eligible workers with protected leave to care for themselves or family members in cases of death, illness, injury, childbirth, adoption, or foster placement. HB 3087 defines employer as any person that employs one or more employees working anywhere in the state. OFLA, as well as the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, both acknowledge that the size of the business is an important factor in determining that business's capacity to accommodate workplace leave. The bottom line for us is that OFLA and FMLA draw an important distinction between large and small employers, and if HB 3087 were to pass, that would no longer be the case, and for that reason alone, irrespective of the employer contribution requirement, we urge you to oppose the bill.
Thank you very much.
Please. Hi, I'm Juanita Lind, and I'm a co-owner of Plum Hill Vineyards, a small winery in Gaston. We have about 4 to 5 FTE employees. I'm here to ask you not to pass House Bill 3087, and the reason is not because I oppose any kind of a family leave. I'm not a heartless individual. I think it's important that we support families taking care of each other. But the reality is small business can't deal with any more regulation, any more financial burden, any more paperwork burden. I was at a presentation this morning with talking about overall Oregon's economy, and as the paper said, it's doing really well, except in small business. Small business hasn't grown since the 70s, and I believe the reason for that is because we continually get hit with more and more regulation. When you have a company as small as mine, if you take on anything such as Small Leave Act, you're talking about the possibility of one in four employees leaving for 3 months at a time. That's a huge burden. And you can't, it's not a $1 for $1 replacement. It's almost double. I left last year for nearly 6 months to run for one of your positions. Not sure why, but I did. And it cost us nearly $60,000. Not that I was worth $60,000, but that's what it costs. So every time we invoke a Sick Leave Act, it's going to cost us a premium pay on our people. And I know how to handle those family leave situations on my own. I mean, right now we have a student that we allow to leave on her own when she needs to get those classes done. We have another person that leaves because of spring break. But we handle those on our own and manage those on an employee-to-employer basis. And as soon as you impose these regulations on us, you break that relationship.
Thank you all for testifying. So next I'm going to call up Amy Donahue, Katie Osberger, and Ben Verhoeven. Ben.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify here today in support of House Bill 3087 for paid family leave and medical insurance. My name is Amy Donahue, and I'm a principal at Bohr Architects, a firm of 65 people. In 2015, we instituted a paid family leave policy, offering 6 weeks of paid leave at 60% of salary for any event covered under the Oregon Family Leave Act. We were spurred to action by the circumstances of a valued employee who was going to become a single mother. She was facing the choice of returning to work just 2 weeks after the birth of her child or financing maternity leave via credit cards. Our leave policy allowed her time to bond with her son and return to work without additional financial stress. Since then, 5 more employees, both mothers and fathers, have taken leave to care for their newborns. We've also had employees take time for the death of a loved one, as well as a colleague who had emergency surgery and took leave to heal. It should be noted, each and every one of these employees has returned to work, ready to work, which has had a very significant impact on Bora's financial health, as we've been able to retain our investment in their talent, experience, and job knowledge. We know when you support employees in their personal lives, you create an environment of loyalty and dedication that is hugely beneficial to our economy. Beyond the economic case, providing family leave is the responsible thing to do as a society. People need support in the most vulnerable moments in their lives. We understand that there are many businesses smaller than ours who would struggle to offer this benefit on their own. And this is why a state insurance policy is so critical. Oregonians should not be forced to accept economic hardship or the loss of gainful employment for prioritizing their own well-being or that of a loved one. It is time for Oregon to acknowledge the moral and economic imperative of paid family leave and act to implement a policy for its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Lively, members, thank you. My name is Katie Augsburger. I head up the Employee Experience Department at Explain, which is a small design firm in downtown Portland. We are a small business. Explain has prided itself on creating a great place to work. For us, that means incorporating a generous leave program and an unlimited PTO. We also have a fully paid maternity and paternity leave as part of our commitment to employees. This, I promise, has not been easy, but we knew it was the right thing for us to do. We have found that all employees, regardless of their seniority, their position, their gender, or family status, have utilized this leave. Just a brief example, dealing with a major health crisis, our CEO needed multiple leaves and time to recover. His time that he used allowed him to fully rejuvenate, rest, and return back to work. Ready, like she said, to work. As you can imagine, this is a great benefit for our employees, but it is also a critical benefit for us. We have a turnover rate of under 3%. We have really happy and healthy and engaged employees. That being said, we recognize that this is a privilege that most Oregonians don't share. We know that the difference between unpaid and paid leave for a new mother might mean she's unable to give herself adequate time to heal and bond. We understand that paid family and medical leave in our state can make the difference between paying the bills and caring for a dying relative. Explain wants to be a leader in being a great place to work, but we do not want to be an anomaly. We believe that having a statewide program that supports paid and family medical leave is critical to our state. And in these trying and very confusing times, Oregon has taken a strong stand on the side of compassion and fairness towards working people. We as a state have become a bright beacon on how to live our shared values. Now more than ever, we should push to do what is right, even when it is difficult, and be a leader when others choose to reduce rights.
Thank you very much.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, hello there. I'm Ben Verhoeven. I'm a second-generation farmer, and I run a family-owned greenhouse in Albany, Oregon. I'm proud to say my 20-year-round and 40 seasonal employees receive great benefits, which, in the big picture, don't cost me much, but mean a lot to everyone. And they're good for business. My workers are entitled to 12 weeks of full-pay parental leave, maternity and paternity, not to mention health care, paid vacation, paid sick leave, and a pension. Many industry groups claim that policies like ours will hurt business. That's just not true. Paid parental leave on average costs me less per year than truck repairs and has a much greater effect on the lives of the people I work with, especially their families. When industry groups say paid family leave will hurt business, what they really mean is that it will hurt their personal profits. And I know this because at the end of the day, the proceeds for those benefits come out of my pocket. But I pay for it because it's the right thing to do. And I can't emphasize this enough, it's good for my business. Parental leave helps me retain key employees, and it has been a fantastic recruiting tool for new hires. I don't have to retrain, and I find and keep the best possible workers. Let's make the same true for Oregon. I know offering parental leave, let alone comprehensive family leave, is not easy for all small businesses, which is why an insurance program is the best way forward. It costs businesses like mine less than offering standalone plans, and I know that my workers are also contributing. I won't constantly have to balance responsibility to my workers with agony over cost. Instead, I will know that the state program will manage the fund, confirm a worker qualifies, and of course, pay for the leave itself out of that fund. This is a real service both for me and for my employees. Oregon cannot afford to pass this opportunity up. It's the right thing to do. Support House Bill 3087. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It appeared there was another member of the audience who was wanting to speak too while you were speaking. Yeah.
That's
he didn't quite
generation.
Get to. Okay, I'd like to, at this point, to call up Betsy Earle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earle is representing Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. Sorry for my tardy entrance to the committee, but you guys are pretty full in here, so I've been down the hall. What I mostly want to convey to you today is that the business community in Oregon is very interested in working with proponents, and we have already conveyed this to them, to find a solution that works for paid family leave. Most businesses support the concept of family leave in general, and as you have already heard, many already offer paid leave or disability insurance that can be used for extended family leave-related absences. But it's our opinion that 3087, as written right now, overreaches and creates conditions that would make it difficult for businesses, in particular small ones, to plan and manage their operations. So just, we have submitted our testimony on OLIS, so you can look at that later, but I think the highlights of our problems are in particular the fact that the bill extends the protections of Oregon Family Leave Act down to, from a threshold of 25 employees down to basically a threshold of one employee. And the law is, you know, hard. It gets progressively harder to administer a law and leave like this as the employer gets smaller and smaller. So that's something we would like to work on with proponents. We're concerned about some, I think somebody else mentioned this to you, about the people that somebody could take leave to care from that are outside their family, particularly individuals whose close association to the employee is the equivalent of a family relationship. We feel that this is fairly ambiguous and subjective and would be easily exploited. So we're concerned about that. We would like to talk again about taking concurrent leave with paid, already provided paid sick or paid vacation leave. And of course, we would need to talk with proponents about who's paying for the leave. Most of the other states that provide a program like this, as you've already heard, are funded mainly by employees. So that's a discussion we also need to have. So we urge you to consider this bill in the light of being able to imbalance employer and employee needs together.
Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. So I use part of my time running down the hall?
We'll give you credit for it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Iris Hodge, Louis Manrigat. Manward, Kelly Martin. Oh, is that who signed up? Sorry, I wasn't looking at the other list. So, okay. I have two lists here, and I'm trying to look back and forth, and so. Okay. Somebody else came running down the hall. Welcome.
Chair Lively and committee members, thank you. My name is Kelly Martin, and my family and I live in Beaverton.
In May 2011, I gave birth to my first child. At 19 weeks gestation, she was diagnosed with a congenital heart defect, and we knew she would have heart surgery shortly after birth. We were told many times that the estimates were a 1 to 2 week recovery and then discharge from the hospital. My husband put in for 6 weeks of unpaid leave from his job, thinking that would be ample time to resettle at home. After surgery, our daughter suffered many complications and was in the ICU at Dornbecker for over 2 months. At the five-week mark, my husband had the excruciating choice to either stay at our daughter's bedside as she fought for her life, spending every valuable second with her, not knowing at times if she would ever come home with us, or return to work and leave me to navigate the ICU alone. He decided to extend his leave for the full 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Our daughter finally discharged from the hospital and my husband went back to work, but we now had thousands of dollars of medical bills to pay on top of having zero income for 3 months. In 2015, I happily gave birth to our second child. Because we never fully recovered financially from going 3 months with no income in 2011, my husband was only able to take 1 week of paid vacation time from work after her delivery. We had just 4 precious days of bonding at home before he returned to work. Recently, his company began offering 6 weeks of paid family leave, and my heart breaks because I wish we could have had that time with our second baby. I'm urging you to pass. I'm urging you to please support House Bill 3087. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dear Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is Luis Manriquez. I'm a family physician who works in Portland, Scappoose, and Enterprise, Oregon. I take care of families across the spectrum of life, from new parents welcoming their first child to elders worried about burdening their children with health needs and medical expenses. It is an honor and a privilege to be a family doctor, but I must admit that oftentimes a family's biggest problems are not about health care. Family leave is one example. When I think about paid family leave, I remember my first year of medical residency when my wife gave birth to our twins, Javier and Frances. Residents don't have paid maternity or paternity leave, and I could not afford not to work. So we cobbled together paternity leave by using all my sick days for the 4 years of residency and extending my training, because as a family, we think it's important that fathers be there for their children. And with twins, you need all the help you can get. But let me be clear. Paid family leave is not just about urban professionals like myself. I work in Scappoose and Enterprise, rural communities where families are struggling to make ends meet when they have a baby or sick family member who needs care. At a recent community meeting in Scappoose, I asked who had gone back to work before they were ready after having a child. All the attendees were mothers, and every single one raised their hands. Very few workers have access to any paid family leave in our state, and even fewer have access in rural areas. In addition, childcare can be much harder to find in rural areas. For example, in Scappoose, there is no available childcare for infants. The health benefits of paid family leave are clear. Being home with a new baby improves parent-infant bonding and breastfeeding during the most pivotal time of a child's life. The health of a child is what matters the most, of course. But it's worth noting that healthy children are very cheap and sick ones are expensive. It's good medicine. Paid family leave is evidence-based policy and it's good medicine. There's nothing more fundamentally important than family, and providing space for parents to be home when a family is starting is one of the best things we can do to show who we are as a society. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Iris Hodge. I'm the outreach coordinator for the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. We're a network of over 3,500 small business owners across the state who work to pass inclusive and equitable policy for our local economies. I've submitted my testimony online. There's a piece on asking for inclusivity for those who can't be here, who are running their businesses. I've submitted testimony on behalf of other small business owners, and we have some MSA members here as well. Today, I'd like to issue our support for HB 3087. Main Street Alliance members surveyed over the last 8 months overwhelmingly support paid family and medical leave for their employees. I've been across the state and back again, talking to hundreds of small business owners who value their employees and understand that when medical emergencies arise, most often it is the low-wage workers that lack the savings to see them through. HB 3087 is a simple insurance program run by a trusted entity, the DCBS, who oversees the unemployment program. Main Street Alliance members believe that the proposed program has been put together with the utmost care to simplify the process for employees and employers. This plan would require the employee and employer to invest at a nominal amount, that 0.5%, for the possibility of medical and family emergencies. For small businesses, this is the way to ensure these trusted, loyal, hardworking employees are able to care for themselves and their families without the stress and instability that our current non-paid FMLA law works. Main Street Alliance members are small businesses. We're the mom-and-pop shops that are the backbones of our communities. We believe HB 3087 levels the playing field with large corporations who may already offer these programs to their employees by letting these businesses have a chance to provide for the most important business investment, their employees. We urge you to support HB 3087. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next I'll call up Lee Mercer. Representative Brock Smith.
Well, I just had a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the Main Street Alliance.
Yeah.
Folks.
You just thought you were done.
Try and run.
I appreciate your testimony and the others that were on the panel. How many of your Main Street Alliance members offer this type of program to their employees now that you survey?
Chair Lively, Representative Smith. So we didn't survey on that. We asked more broadly, but that's something we could definitely ask our members and send it out and get back to you if you're interested.
I am.
You are? Okay. I'll try and get that done for you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
No, no problem.
Lee Mercer, Rachel, and Evan.
Chair Lively, members of the committee and committee staff, thank you. I'll try to be brief. I'm here wearing two hats. One as a retired small business owner. I owned and operated theaters like Salem Cinema in California, Nevada for 20 years, and that's close to a not being nonprofit. It's hard to make a profit in that business, and in California, this was before there was paid family leave, so we didn't have it. The only benefit our employees had were free movies and popcorn. But that was back in the day. My concern as a small business owner is the businesses that are calling out, and I'm sympathetic with struggling small business owners because I did it most of my life. This benefit looks to me like a very affordable insurance system to mean that we can provide benefits that we were never able to provide when I was in business. And we had a management motto for all the business I ever owned and managed, and that is, take care of your people, and they take care of you. And this is a good way, an inexpensive way, to take care of your people. The question I have for all the people that are objecting to this proposed law is, if New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and California are doing this, and they have robust economies with robust businesses, robust farms, and robust public entities, it seems to work pretty well already. It's a tested product, and it's something we should move forward on. So as I'm also on the executive team of Main Street Alliance, and I agree we should support it. I'm also the president of Healthcare for All Oregon. We're advocating for universal, publicly funded health care. That's a big debate in the country now. But what we feel like from a public health perspective is we do in this nation need to get to universal health care and have everybody covered. But that's only part of the battle. If people can't stay home and take care of an ailing parent or an ailing child, we're not there. So we support that from Healthcare for All Oregon. And there's testimony from HCAO in your packet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Lively and committee, my name is Rachel Jessical, and I live in Beaverton, so thank you for letting me come here to offer support for HB 3087. My husband, Kevin, and I have a blended family. He wanted to be here to testify, but he has to work, so I'm here for both of us. The birth of our daughter, our youngest daughter, 2 years ago was very difficult and left me incapacitated for about a week with great difficulty to walk. Kevin was only able to take 2 days off to be with me in the hospital. If he had not returned to work after those 2 days, he could have been replaced. And we live paycheck to paycheck as it is, and our family could not afford for him to take unpaid leave and certainly couldn't afford for him to lose his job. Our medical bills for the birth were really high, and we were truly scared about losing everything. So as a result, our family had a really rough start with our new baby. I had a really difficult recovery from birth, and it was hard to take care of the baby myself. In addition to my physical pain, it was painful for me to witness Kevin not having the much-needed bonding time with our new baby. My husband works really hard outside of our home, and he loves his family. With paid family and medical leave, Kevin could have taken the time to support me in caring for our baby, and he would have had the very important bonding time with her as well. It would have made a big difference for our whole family if he could have been home to help. Kevin and I believe that it's very important for men to have paid family leave because it would change the whole dynamic of families. It would build a family bond from the beginning, and it would help level the playing field in the workplace because both men and women would be expected to take time off for a baby. It would also change children's lives because fathers could be more involved. Many men like Kevin want to take time off work when their children are born, but they can't because of finances and fear of losing their jobs. So I'm asking you on behalf of our entire family and all Oregon families to please support HB 3087. And thank you again for letting me speak.
Thank you.
Chair Lively and committee, my name is Evan Sherrick, and I'm a mother of two young children, and I'm also a pediatrician. Pediatricians have long recognized the benefits of parents caring for their own children for at least the first 12 weeks of their lives. This is a time when children are at their most vulnerable, and it's critical to have a caregiver with them 24 hours a day. Unfortunately, not everyone has the option to stay at home for their new baby. Personally, I can speak to having had my children in two different countries with two different leave policies. My son was born almost 7 years ago in Vancouver, Canada. Because Canada has government-sponsored paid leave, I was able to fully care for my growing baby and myself. I could attend all my prenatal doctor visits without having to worry about using up my sick time. And when after my son was born, I had the economic security to stay home with him for 6 months because the leave was paid at 85% of my salary. Yes, 6 months at 85%. I could attend to my son's every need, and we had ample time to bond. When I did return to work, I was able to dive back into my job and be productive for my employer. My daughter was born 2.5 years later, and it was a much different experience. I had just started a new job in the United States when I became pregnant. As a family, my husband and I could not afford to not be paid for 3 months. As a pediatrician, I knew how important it was for me to stay home to be with my baby. Therefore, we made the decision that for the entirety of my pregnancy, I would not utilize any vacation or sick time because I felt that that would cost me my maternity leave. Most families would not be able to afford the loss of 3 months' wages to stay with their child. In order to stay home, families may need to make difficult decisions, such as taking on extra debt, going on welfare, or returning to work immediately after delivery. In these circumstances, parents are forced to choose between their financial health versus the physical and mental health of baby and parent. Please support HB 3087.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we have time for three more people to testify. So the next up is Jasmine Cross, Charisse Roney, and Carrie McClinahan.
Chair Lively and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to submit my testimony. My name is Jasmine Cross. Our family of four lives in North Portland. My partner and I had planned to be in a better financial place when we had our kids. When I unexpectedly got pregnant with our first son, I was working in the hospitality industry for an employer that exploited his employees. We were subjected to irregular schedules, lack of overtime pay for overtime hours, and overall poor treatment. Because I had no access to paid family leave, I worked as much as I could to save up for the time I would take off to spend time with my baby. Shortly after our first baby was born, I registered for school to access financial aid in order to help support my family. I also accessed food stamps. I went back to work, but I had to stop breastfeeding before I was ready to because there were no facilities to accommodate breast pumping. My plan was to work and go back to school so that I could have more stable income in the future. Even though my partner and I used birth control, I got pregnant again. I employed the same strategy I used before, work as much as possible, this time with a young child, to save up for when my second baby arrived. I had to take out more student loans in order to spend time with my child. This was not how I hoped to build my school career and life. Because of the lack of paid family leave, we stressed and overworked and incurred student debt. We had no choice because our family was growing and we needed the money. Paid family leave would have made it possible for us to focus on our new family and please support HB 3087. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Since Carrie had to leave, I would like to call up Sharon Soliday. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is Charisse Roney. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 3087 on behalf of the Main Street Alliance, on behalf of small businesses, and on behalf of working families in Oregon. I am a business owner. I'm a small business owner that owns a law firm, and I represent folks who need paid leave. Unlike a century ago, most parents today routinely work outside the home. In 2015, 97% of men with children under 18 participated in the labor force. Of women who became mothers last year, 60% are in the workforce and 27% are living in poverty. The percentage of stay-at-home dads has increased nationally to two million people today who are now stay-at-home dads. Although we have FEMLA and have OFLA in our state, it's estimated that only 13 to 14% of private industry employees have access to paid leave. And that 13% are the big companies. They're doing what they should do and what everyone has a basic right to, which is paid leave. We know as small business owners that we want to do that and we want to do the right thing, but we lose good employees. We lose particularly females and we experience costly turnover because we can't afford it. Small business owners want to help people who are in their time of need or who are taking care of a new child. More and more states and localities are considering paid family leave as a key policy priority. You've heard of some already. Rhode Island, California, New Jersey are some that have forged ahead, and we can too. Paid family leave in California has been around the longest. It passed in 2002, took effect in 2004, and the number of fathers who took leave there increased 400% between 2005 and 2013. Now, I'm emphasizing the benefits of men as much as women and children because of one key reason. There is a perception that women are primary caregivers and there is a discrimination against them, and this bill will help alleviate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Good afternoon. Here we are. Thank you for your time, Chair and committee members. My name is Sharon Soliday, and I'm the CEO of the Hello Foundation, a for-profit staffing and therapeutic services company of speech, language pathologists, and occupational therapists. Hello has close to 60 employees, predominantly women, and is responsible for bringing millions of dollars into the state of Oregon each year. Our business continues to grow rapidly. I believe this committee are likely to have received testimony and have heard from other business professionals about the financial hardship paid leave would impose on them should this become a reality in Oregon. But be assured, I personally understand the implication of legislative mandates on the health of a company. I am responsible for attending to the bottom line and every decision leading to that bottom line. But today, my critical message is that business adapts. It is the primary function of good economic leadership in a company to continually adapt based on the best interests of business in relationship to the bottom line. So yes, passage of this bill will be asking businesses to adapt, but businesses will also have to adapt to a decrease in expensive employee turnover, increased ease of competitive recruiting, and sharing the news of a more compassionate and family-friendly benefits package. Employees do not take a leave to create a hardship for their employer. They take a leave because a hardship or a new baby has become a reality for their family. In this moment, we have the opportunity to bring some peace of mind to Oregon families in a financially responsible manner. It's good for business to care about the well-being of Oregon children and families. It serves our business recruitment, stability, and it provides for an economically healthy consumer base. No doubt, it's been a long afternoon, and I have appreciated your attention, and I thank you for your support for House Bill 3087.
Thank you very much. And so for those that didn't get a chance to testify, if you haven't already submitted testimony to all of us online, I would appreciate you can go ahead and do that. Just for next steps, we currently have a work session scheduled for this bill on the 6th of April would be the next time. Doesn't mean it would necessarily move there, but that would be the first chance to hear amendments and talk about what the next steps would be. But we appreciate all of you attending and your testimony. Well spoken. Thank you very much. Testimony. Well spoken. Thank you very much.